Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC, and with me now is Senator Elizabeth Warren, the senior senator from Massachusetts, former Harvard Law professor and author 10 times over. She is in the news as usual for all kinds of reasons, including protecting her Consumer Financial Protection Bureau from Republican assault, calling for Jeff Sessions to resign this week, and talking everywhere about her new book since it came out in April called This Fight Is Our Fight, The Battle to Save America's Middle Class. She'll be at Town Hall on West 43rd Street at 5 o'clock this afternoon if you want to see her in person. And there is even now an Elizabeth Warren action figure. Senator, great to have you on with us again. Welcome back to WNYC.
Oh, thank you. It's good to be back, Brian.
Republicans in Wall Street don't like your brainchild, the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau, but an editorial in the Washington Post today says not to worry. It says the CFPB can't be changed without 60 votes in the Senate, and Republicans don't have them. Is the Bureau secure because of that?
Look, I hope that's right, but keep in mind, they also have other ways to attack it and undermine it. So, for example, you know, they can do things that will leash up that watchdog and then attach it to a must-pass spending bill. You know, there are a lot of ways, because here's the deal. They are really, really determined to try to make this agency go away. Not completely repeal it, but just not be able to do anything. You know, the banking industry spent $1 million a day for over a year lobbying against the financial reforms generally, but in particular the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau. And we didn't get it through because there were a lot of people on our side, you know, who had a lot of money to put in it. We got it through because a lot of people across this country demanded it of Congress. And now it's really paying off for people. So here's this little agency. It's been up and running about 5 years. It's already forced the biggest financial institutions in this country to return nearly $12 billion directly to families they cheated. It's handled nearly 1 million consumer complaints. Anybody listening who's upset about a bank that, you know, put a $5 fee on them or that wouldn't return a $14,000 down payment, whatever it is, banks, credit cards, financial products, student loans, can go to the website and take a look at it, cfpb.gov, and can file a complaint if they want. It's government that's working for the people, and it's beginning to level the playing field on these financial products. And the industry just can't stand that. So they've called on their buddies in Congress, and right now the Republicans are doing everything they can to try to leash up this little watchdog. It made it through the House, and now we're fighting it out in the Senate.
I saw you say in a Wall Street Journal interview the other day that the too-big-to-fail banks are even bigger than before. Do you think Dodd-Frank's language failed to protect the financial system from a 2008-style shock?
So I think that it is a step in the right direction, but it's not as strong as it both could have been and should have been. And, you know, I'll pick the most obvious one, and that is just breaking up the biggest financial institutions. The community banks, the credit unions, they basically have one business model. They're there to serve their customers, checking accounts, savings accounts, home mortgages. But a handful of giant banks control most of the banking assets in this country. And they do two things simultaneously. They do checking accounts and savings accounts and that sort of thing so that if anything goes wrong, they know that the American people will be pressed to bail them out. And at the same time, they do a lot of speculative lending, you know, on Wall Street and engaged in stock transactions and all around the world. And the idea behind Glass-Steagall, when it was put in place back in the 1930s, was to say, whoa, let's just separate those two things and to say to folks in financial services, look, if you want to do checking account, savings account, that's fine. You can kind of count on steady profits year after year. They're not going to be huge, but you'll be safe, you'll be secure, and you take care of people's money. Or if you want to go take gambles, that's fine too. That's fine. But you got to gamble with your investors' money, not depositors' money, investors' money, and you got to be separate. Yep. And the banks hated that wall. They finally knocked it down in the late 1990s. And one way that we can make the financial system more secure is to bring back Glass-Steagall.
Nirmala, am I saying your name right? In Westchester,
yes.
You're on WNYC with Elizabeth Warren. Hello.
Good morning, Brian. Love your show. Good morning, Senator Warren.
Good morning, Nirmala.
President Trump launched his re-election campaign on the day he was inaugurated. And he is constantly connecting with his voter base, and he is conducting regular rallies and getting his message across. My question is, what are the Democrats doing to get their message across to the voters? How are they explaining their policies and agenda to these voters, particularly in swing states?
So that's a really good question, Nirmala, but I'm actually going to back it up and say, I think this is partly about getting your message out, and Democrats need to do a good job of that. I saw, for example, my good friend Sherrod Brown is running for re-election in Ohio, and you better believe he's out there in Ohio every single day talking to people. He's doing it in radio interviews and on television. He's doing it by tweeting and Facebook. My good friend Tammy Baldwin, Tammy and I came into the Senate together and have worked together on many things. She's in Wisconsin. She's making that fight strong in Wisconsin. Joe Donnelly in Indiana. And I'm just talking about my Senate colleagues. There are also a lot of folks in the House who are beginning to make these arguments, and a lot of Democrats who are challenging Republicans in their seats. So there's a lot of outreach, and I think it's really important. I think we need to do more in terms of grassroots organizing. But the part I want to push on the hardest is we also need to just be in the fight. You know, we can't just be drawn off by Donald Trump's tweets all the time. And I know he does rallies, and I know that gets a lot of folks stirred up. But we live in a world now where you got to stay focused on the key parts about what's happening in this economy. And for me, this is about how we build an economy that doesn't just work for those at the top. It works for all of us. The fight right now over health care shows this better than anything could, the divide between the Republicans and the Democrats. Right now we've got 13 Republicans behind closed doors in the United States Senate, locking out every single Democrat, saying they're going to decide what the shape of your health insurance looks like going forward. They're going to decide whether or not your child who was born with a lot of complex medical problems is going to continue to get help so that child can stay at home and people will come and help you. They're going to decide whether or not your granny who doesn't have any money can stay in a nursing home or just gets pushed out with nothing. These are huge decisions that these folks are making. And their plan is to do all that in secret, to push through a health care bill. Why? So that they can hand out tax breaks to a handful of millionaires and billionaires. So for me, it's about right now being in this fight over health care, talking about this fight over health care, fighting this fight over health care. I think that's the core. We got to fight the issues that are in front of us right now, and we've got to enlist as many folks in America as we can. Sure. And, you know, I'll add one more little part, and that is when I wrote this book, This Fight is Our Fight, one of the things I talk about is how more people can get engaged, because we don't have enough votes in the Senate to stop them. We have got to find ways to get people engaged so that we'll put pressure on the Republicans not to take away people's health insurance and not to drive up costs on health insurance.
Because of your expertise in the finance sector, I'm curious to get your take on a specific aspect of the special counsel's Trump investigations. The Washington Post reports that investigators have been looking for any evidence of possible financial crimes among Trump associates. Those presumably include Michael Flynn, Paul Manafort, and Carter Page. And separately, the Post reports that Mueller is looking into Jared Kushner's finances. Knowing the finance world as you do, as well as the law, do you have a sense of what they might be scrutinizing of Kushner's and the others?
Sure. I mean, look, I don't know the details, and I really have to start there. I have not seen anyone's documents, but I can tell you the kinds of things that investigators generally look for in a case like this. They look to see where people borrowed money, because when someone has lent you money, they've got power over you. They look to see what deals someone has invested in. Because once you've invested your money in a deal, then you have a real interest in how it all works out. They look to see where your income actually comes from, where the revenues are coming from, what the revenue stream is like. Because the people who are feeding those revenues obviously have a tie to you under those circumstances. So those are the kinds of things they will be looking into, I assume, both here in the United States and elsewhere around the world.
And one more thing on that. Special Counsel Mueller has hired Andrew Weissman, former head of the U.S. Department of Justice's fraud unit, who, among other things, led the Enron fraud investigation. What does that indicate about what they're looking for as follow the money? And do you know him?
I do not know him. But he has an outstanding reputation. You know, these big deals, borrowing money, investing in complex financial dealings, man, the paperwork on these, it can be really complicated. But he's someone who has proven he can track from one piece of paper to the next piece of paper to the next piece of paper, and, as you say, follow the money. The money will tell where the influence is.
Nick in Brooklyn, you're on WNYC with Senator Elizabeth Warren. Hi, Nick.
Hi. I'm calling because I have been following your career. I'm a huge fan, and I'm so thankful, Brian, that you have Elizabeth Warren on. But one thing that I'm really concerned about is I feel like the country's faith in politics, in politicians, in government is so deeply eroded that it's been very hard for me to acknowledge, but I feel like a civil war is all but inevitable. And I have two teenage kids. I'm very worried about their future. And
you talking about a culture war, or are you talking about a shooting war?
I'm talking about a real war, just like the one in the 19th century. And the reason I feel this is happening is because it seems so clear that the majority of powerful people in government have absolutely no compassion. When I hear the phrase...
And Nick, forgive me for time. Do you have a specific question to finish with for Senator Warren?
Yes, I'm sorry. I'm wondering how we can restore faith in people who, for instance, don't believe in any gun regulation or gun control.
Senator, go ahead.
So let me put it this way, Nick. This is actually a big part of what I try to talk about in the book, about who government works for. And I make the argument in the book that starting in the 1930s, we really made an effort in Washington to make government work for working people, to create opportunities. And that meant that we used regulation over Wall Street, over big financial institutions as one of the tools to try to level the playing field, make sure everybody was treated fairly. But the second half is we used progressive taxation. So those at the top paid more in taxes, and then we made investments in public education, in infrastructure, in roads and bridges and power in rural areas, and in research and innovation. And we created an economy that worked. So 1935 to 1980, GDP goes up, and the 90% of America, everybody outside the top 10%, the 90% of America gets 70% of all the new income growth in America. Now, look, it wasn't perfect. African Americans, for example, there was a big black-white wealth gap. But even there, we wanted to see more opportunity. And as the civil rights movement bloomed in the 1960s, from 1965 to 1980, the black-white wealth gap shrunk by 30%.
So
we were on the right track.
As you detail in the book, the history of then Reagan came in with trickle-down economics and everything changed. Why has it worked politically if government was working in the previous era in the way you were just describing? Yep. Why has it worked enough to elect Reagan two times, three terms of Bush's, and now Trump?
Money. And this is the argument I make in the book. First, I show that government has really shifted, that government in Washington is no longer working for the people. It's working for giant corporations. It's working for a handful of millionaires and billionaires. This latest health care bill is an example of it. Heck, I'm an example of it. I'm the daughter of a janitor who got to go to college and graduate from college because there was a $50 commuter college near where I lived. And that's how I got to be a public school teacher and to have a door open for me. Today, that opportunity is not available for our kids. And why? Because Washington works for those with money. This is a big part of what I write about in the book, and it's not just campaign finance, although that is certainly a big part of it.
Right.
It's about the lobbyists. It's about the bought and paid for experts. It's about the revolving door between Washington and Wall Street. It's about these shadowy think tanks that keep coming up with so-called research that supports exactly what the industry tells them they want to hear. And our only chance in this country is now democracy. It's people's voices being heard across this country. It's people linking up through Twitter and through Facebook and through email and through phone calls and showing up at town halls and showing up in rallies. We got to take our government back, and we got to make it work for the people again.
I know you got to go in 1 minute. Any reaction to the news this morning that Amazon is buying Whole Foods? Do you care one way or another?
Yeah, I do care. You know, the more concentration that we see in the giant industries, the more power they have. And it's not just economic power, it's political power. This is something I worry about every single day, that the voices that get heard in Washington are the richest voices, and that we're getting more and more and more concentration, not just of wealth, but of political power in this country. That's why I write in this book how we all got to be in this fight. We've got to fight back. That's why I call the book, This Fight is Our Fight.
Should government reject that acquisition?
Well, we've got to see the details and what they offer, but boy, you got to take a hard look at this. We've had antitrust laws in this country for a century now, but the question is, are they going to be enforced to create level playing fields? Are we going to have a country that just works only for the giants and squeezes out not just every small business, but every medium-sized business, every competitor? One of the things we've discovered is that when you get a whole lot more concentration in industries and concentration in businesses, it not only squeezes out the small businesses, the innovators, the people who would come in and challenge, it also depresses wages for everyone else.
Mm-hmm.
I believe in capitalism. I'm a strong capitalist, but it requires competitive markets. And that means you got to have some rules. You know, it's kind of like saying, do you like traffic? And the answer is, you know, look, I like for cars to be able to move on the roads, but you got to have some rules. There have to be some stop signs. There have to be some curbs so that there really is competition. That's how we get the benefits of capitalism. And that's how we get the benefits of democracy. We got to have it where all of our voices get heard, not just the voices of people who can hire an army of lobbyists and lawyers.
Senator Elizabeth Warren's new book is called This Fight Is Our Fight, The Battle to Save America's Middle Class. And if you want to see her in person, she'll be at Town Hall on West 43rd Street at 5 o'clock this afternoon. Is that just you, or are you in dialogue with somebody?
Do you know? I'm actually, Eric Schneiderman is going to introduce me.
Uh-huh.
And then Zephyr Teachout's going to help run the Q&A. We're going to do as much as we can in terms of questions and answers. So I think we'll have some fun.
How about that? Senator Warren, thank you so much.
Thank you for having me, Brian. I appreciate it.